I think what I'd like to do is talk to you about the details of the proposal. It's all written up in that blue booklet in your handout.
No, it's a white booklet.
It's a white booklet with a blue cover?
No, that's the agenda.
The blue is the agenda.
Oh, okay. And what we have...
No, it's not that one.
This one says making the case for change.
Okay. We put together actually five documents. The first is a cover letter that essentially gives a history of the work, similar to what Teresa has said. And it points out a few topics we've avoided, like resolving tribal rights. I think what I'd like to do is stay with the script, and I apologize for coming close to reading, but I found that when I go off script like some other people, I get in trouble. Well, geographically and constituency distributed, we realized we were a smaller group than the task force envisioned by HM1. Accordingly, we invited some 30 planning and other experts with diverse interests from across the state to review the draft, making the case for change document, before it was issued. We tabulated over 60 comments, and our responses are in a separate document. The executive guidance for water planning extensively lays out how we believe New Mexico water planning should be accomplished in the future. It includes rationale for planners, participation, and the means to remedy the issues cited in the memorial. It deals with each of the issue papers, and as today, it's in final review. We're going to suggest that the legislature simply provide it to the executive branch, the OSC, the ISC, with a recommendation to refine and implement it. And lastly, as a part of the water planning process, we have some specific legislative policy suggestions. We'll talk about those this afternoon, that are currently being reviewed by the Legislative Council Service. The suggestions cover water code amendments, appropriation needs, evaluation of water resource agencies, and the ISC membership and mission reform. The overview of making the case for change. The crux of today's discussion is the dense booklet that Elaine waved at you. And we distilled the essence of 2 years of research, debate, outreach into that document. It's boiled down from what was probably 35 pages. So it's a little tight reading. In approaching its How to Plan mission, the HM1 working group realized that New Mexico's failure to face up to cosmic level state problems had a negative impact on the water planning process at all levels. So we expanded the HM1 task a little to include identifying and proposing solutions for major problems. That expansion adds to and supports a detailed description of how water planning should be made effective, its purposes, its processes, its products, and more importantly, its impacts. At a summary level, New Mexico needs to recognize that water is a limited resource. We cannot continue one-time remedies and ongoing deficit spending of water. The legislature and the executive branch need to get serious about curative action. We identified four major problems facing New Mexicans. First, New Mexico has no planning or governance mechanism in place to deal with the overpumping of groundwater in the lower Rio Grande. Through the Texas lawsuit, the state is risking federal control over our water, as well as estimates as high as $1 billion in damages. In the middle of Rio Grande, we've been using end-of-the-year water discharges to barely meet the required downstream deliveries, which don't aid either the farmer or the fish or anybody else. With temperature rise, reducing overall water availability, the state risks another comparable draconian lawsuit. The third is that New Mexico has allowed significant depletion of our aquifers, such as Estancia, Mimbres, Ogallala. We face the economic impact of inability to provide affordable water in such places, and within just a few decades. New Mexico's water management has allowed unrealistic promises and resultant overuses of water. At that, enforcement has been minimal. And recently, our water planning and management agency staffs and budgets have been decimated. We recognize that there are a few other top-level problems, such as undefined tribal priority rights, but the state needs to focus to accomplish anything well. Now let's take the next slide. Addressing those problems, we identified 5 remedial strategies, all of which are needed to deal with each of the identified problems. The middle 3 are particularly affecting this region. First, our water planning and administration key personnel should be less political and more professional. We need to revise the commissioner and leader appointment processes, insist on appropriate professional qualifications for the roles, and formalize the ISC mission to adequately cover the vital planning tasks. Secondly, we need to reform our attitude and approach to water administration with our resource limitations, compacts, aquifers, treaties being the driving forces. In other words, we have to learn to live within our means for a change. Individual user allocations should conform to the limitations rather than our allocating uses and then praying we can meet the compacts and treaties or sustain the aquifers. To achieve this, we propose to actually implement the existing 15-year-old tool called Active Water Resource Management, or AWRM, particularly within the complex and difficult areas of the state. While AWRM calls for priority administration, it also enables and implicitly encourages negotiation of local alternative water administration rules. And that's a proper role for regional water planning. Number 3, water planning must focus on envisioning solutions and creating realistic strategies to address identified problems, and be genuinely recognized as a primary driving force for water-related decision-making. For primary water planning, we recommend ongoing sub-regional or locale roundtables, providing a negotiating environment to deal with local issues. Regional roundtables should be aligned to surface groundwater basins, to surface and ground or groundwater basins, and made up of representatives from the locales or subregions. The region's role is to make sure the subregions, as neighbors, are properly coordinated and meet the appropriate aggregate resource limits. beyond funding, the state, ISC, is for broad policy establishment and oversight of the planning process. Strategy four is competent water planning needs credible, relevant, science-based data on resources and on demands. The common technical platform or approach across regions is really desirable. However, the ISC's so-called administrative water supply that used water use snapshot in time, assumed demand equaled withdrawals, and considered only selected water uses, that administrative water supply was worse than misleading. At a minimum, water planning data needs to take cognizant of ownership constraints, of seasonal, annual, and decadal fluctuations, and of geospatial attributes. And of course, that data must be readily available to the local water planners. Our detailed planning guidance document proposes a science-based, common technical platform approach. And lastly, of course, funding is an issue. The current request of $280,000 for water planning program is completely insufficient. While there'd be substantial costs to establish the reforms for ongoing planning administration, they will be small in comparison with the cost should we continue on our current trajectory. We recommend a large one-time appropriation to cover 2 years of the cost for OSE and ISC to establish the proposed reforms. And during those 2 years, we would expect them to scope out appropriate ongoing planning and administration efforts and to identify revenue or funding streams to cover costs and to report back to the legislative committee in no more than the 2 years' time. Let's do that. There are really no surprises here, except maybe for collecting the problems and solutions into one place, we're not saying anything that's new. Other states are robustly addressing their planning and resiliency issues. New Mexico is lagging behind in both. We're now suggesting change, and substantial change at that, involving both legislative action and executive action. And at this point, I think Teresa is going to present the punchlines, what the legislature should do.
So what should the legislature do? And do they have the capacity to do it? And is there a public will to move this legislation forward? So our paper concluded that we needed some serious reform, of our water administration, and we felt it was critical for social, for economic and environmental well-being of our state, not just now, but in the future. Making a case for change contains all of the suggested steps. We are asking that the legislature establish policies and enact the code revisions in accord with our suggestions. So part of the reason that we're gathering here today is that we are making a call to action from folks who are interested in this topic and who have perhaps some extra time on their hands to help us get there and make this call to action to our legislators. So I just wanted to read this sort of last comment that we made to the legislative, the interim committee, the Water and Natural Resources Interim Committee. It's the most important committee that we have to make these cases to them. So I'm going to read this because we definitely got a lot of feedback and people really heard us. In an environment of shrinking water availability, the state has promised far more water than it has or has ever had. Besides violating Article 16 of the state constitution, this overpromise risks huge quantities of taxpayer dollars in interstate compact lawsuit damages, federal control of New Mexico's water, and the economic consequences of little or no affordable groundwater left in large areas of our state. There will be pushback against change from those who have enjoyed the status quo, such as the overuse of water that causes downdraw of resource reserves. However, to avoid dire consequences in the not too distant future, the state must act promptly. So that's how we concluded it. And we are making the case to you too.
So what we thought now, after having gone through the Making a Case for Change booklet, which you have all read and memorized, there will be a quiz. This, after all, is a university. So we have a panel of some of the members, including Tadesa and Bob and Norm, to go over in more detail some of the ideas that are being discussed. And then we hopefully have left enough time for questions and comments so that other issues that may not have been raised or put in there or suggestions can also be included. And they asked me to MC it, which is really pretty funny because I don't even have a watch. So I don't even watch how much time has passed. I know. It's only an hour off, so I figure I can watch that one. The reason I can deal without a watch is that there's so many clocks in this world. Anyway, so that's what we're going to do now, is we're going to actually move from the general to a more specific, in-depth analysis of seven ideas. And there you have it. Bob? Oh, okay.
Maybe as an introductory comment, I should emphasize that all of these ideas are ways to make water planning effective. They don't deal with the other topics of making a case for change. So we're just focusing on what could be done to make water planning effective.
Good. Thank you. Bob?
Okay.
Did you want me to touch?
No. When I get to the second one, you want to click the second name.
Okay. I think I can do
that. I guess the first topic is talking about the role of water planning. And I think it sort of divides into two sections, purpose and attributes. And the purpose is to protect our water supplies and to make our uses more resilient for the long term. Planning is to balance the interests of the individual with those of the community, of course, subject to legal constraints. You need to address goals and policies and use it as a tool to assure competent water governance. Planning is a means to decide how to deal with problems, and it must be used to drive subsequent development and operational decisions. Some of the attributes of planning: it has to articulate goals, objectives, issues, and problems at the appropriate level, especially the elephants in their respective rooms. Planning must be an ongoing process to deal with evolving situations, not once in a while. Planning must continually involve a wide array of stakeholders and the general public and clearly show how the benefits exceed the cost of participating. Must recognize hydrologic reality and have a sound scientific or technical basis. must identify and evaluate alternative approaches to address the issues and problems, including forecasting the outcomes or impacts of the no-action alternative. Planning must address a wide array of topic areas, including land use decisions, water quality standards, recreational needs, environmental protections, agricultural uses, urban growth demands, tribal requirements, and climatic changes. Planning must prioritize among recommendations. Desires always exceed the resources. Plans must be coordinated across neighbors and disciplines, and they need to be acceptable and approved at higher levels, sub-region approved at the region, region approved at the state. And again, it must have impact. There must be strong incentives for all to adhere to the plans or to modify them when needed. And that's the role. The next topic I was assigned.
Just a second. Do you guys want to have questions in between, or did you want to do all seven and then questions, or how did you want to do that?
I'm comfortable anyway.
I think we should finish before we have questions.
Just asking.
The hydrologic regional boundaries. This first the situation and then what to do about it. New Mexico Statute 72-14-43 says, and I quote, "The future water needs of New Mexico can best be met by allowing each region of the state to plan for its water future." But what makes sense to be a so-called region? Let's look again at the slide with the regional dissections of the state. Where did I go? She put it up right. The upper left shows ISC's traditional regions, a hybrid of political and historic decisions. Water planning regions have minimal relation to the state engineer management districts. That's the upper right. They mostly ignore hydrology, with aquifers, watersheds, stream systems often spanning regional boundaries. Over decades, we found regions frequently being much larger than the scale of problems that need solution. Participants get discouraged and abandon the process when they have to sit through issues in a far distant part of the region. The need for change surfaced repeatedly in the ISC's December's 2017 Town Hall on Water. What do we do about it? Well, water planning should follow the water. Some problems need to be addressed at the local level, far smaller than a region. Other problems require consideration across regional boundaries. We recommend that new regional boundaries encompass whole basins or collections of whole basins. In the case of Middle Rio Grande and Lower Rio Grande, and perhaps other interstate stream systems, the regional boundaries should be dictated by compact measurement or obligation criteria. Each region should be locally dissected into one or more subregions or locales based on the individual hydrologic and demographic attributes of the region. We suggest a grassroots process for performing planning. Subregional planners should identify the local goals, objectives, problems, and then plan prioritized remedies of those problems. Regional planners made up of representatives from the subregions should address regional or basin goals and problems, like compact declining shared aquifers. They ensure that the subregional plans do not step on the toes of each other, and in aggregate, meet the obligations of the whole basin. The regional planners need to deal with prioritizing funds deployment amongst subregions. And regional or basin plans must adhere to the general overall policies put forth by the state and justify to the state the needs for funds within the regions, which in turn seek to deploy available funds to the regions. Next.
Sorry.
So my role is to talk about data as data and information as the basis for reliable water planning. In order to make water planning effective, planning needs to be based on the best facts that we can assemble with regard to the water balance, the water budget of an area that deals with both supply and the demands that we place on that supply. The supply is both the physically available supply, limited by the amount of that water that's legally available, and that becomes crucially important here in the Middle Rio Grande. Oftentimes, the data we may have may not be sufficient to answer all the questions we have or to serve as the basis for our planning. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't plan. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't go out and gather all the data before we start to plan. Rather, we need to take an iterative approach, doing the best we can with what we have based on our analysis of the shortcomings and the information that is the basis of our planning. We then plan to collect more data. You get the data, you integrate it into the models, you repeat. And that's the situation that I hope we can transition to and follow, you know, for the future. In order to illustrate this for you, I want to tell you a little story from my personal experience. I was water resources manager for the city of Albuquerque. And the reason I got the job is because my predecessor, who had just begun some planning, was saying things that were so alarming to the Albuquerque business community that they got him fired. My boss looked around, I guess, at his staff and picked me to do the job. And I want to tell you just very briefly about the approach that we took. The beginning of the story is that Albuquerque was fat, dumb, and happy with regard to its groundwater supply. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the summer, and this was in the early 1980s, some of the city's best wells in the Los Altos golf course went dry. They quit pumping water. And everybody in the water utility division kind of scratched their head and said, "That's weird." So it called the well services contractor, they lowered the pumps, I think, 40 feet further down into the well bore and started pumping again and didn't think much more about it. But 2 years later, it happened again. Same wells, went dry, what's going on here? Does that indicate we need to do something? Well, the situation that time was that Albuquerque had essentially no groundwater monitoring, it didn't know what was going on. It had no models. Why would we need a model? We have an infinite aquifer. And there was basically no planning. The only planning was for where we're going to build the next reservoirs and drill the next wells. So we were truly fat, dumb, and happy. The developers got the planner removed. I inherited the job of figuring out how to go forward. And I decided, based on my analytical background, I'm a water resources engineer, that the place to start was with a computer simulation model. And even though that was a long time ago, models were basically what was done in these sort of circumstances everywhere but New Mexico. Well, what model might have credibility? Because we have to have credibility. And what we decided was it had to be the USGS. The USGS was the entity that needed to develop the model as an independent scientific agency. And we asked all of the hydrogeologists and hydrologists in the Albuquerque area to come together into a technical advisory committee to kind of look over the USGS's shoulders as they put this model together. Well, it turned out there was plenty of information to do a model. Maybe not the best model, but a good model. And so a model was put together and simulations were run. And the no action alternative was a disaster. And how do we convey this? Well, Los Alamos National Laboratory offered to do a computer visualization of the results of the simulation. And I think it cost an incredible amount of money because the tools that were available way back then, you know, it's second nature now. But that visualization turned the tide. and it led to the Water Resources Strategy, which said that the old visualization of the connection between the aquifer and the river was wrong. We can't just pump and the river replace the aquifer in real time and we use San Juan Chum water to make the river whole. Rather, those time frames are very spread out and we need to know what reality is and then figure out how to limit it. So that was done. Well, I could go on and on, but I think that this is the general approach that needs to be used in all the regions. We need to do what we can with what we have. We have to decide what data we must get, what models we must improve, what water budgets we must try to write and then refine in order to serve as the basis of planning. We also need to make water data available widely. We need to know, have the data, and we need to have data called metadata about how good the data are. And we don't have to reinvent the wheels. This has been done elsewhere with great elegance. You know, that's maybe one of the benefits of being behind the curve is we can learn from what others have done and we don't have to invent those wheels ourselves. So our government agencies need to take this at heart and get after it. And we hope with resources in the new administration we can. One other point about data. We surely are not going to agree with regard to our values. Our values are so different. We ought to be able to come together and agree what the facts are. Now, in these days and ages, that even that seems difficult. But the facts are the facts, and the people who put the data together have credibility and objectivity and are not tied to specific positions. Maybe we can agree about the facts. We can understand what the no action alternative will do with us. We can evaluate our alternatives and we can plan our water future in the state rather than being the victims of continuing not to plan. Thank you.
Thanks everyone for being so patient. Let's see, I'm going to talk about the plan approval and implementation. So as you all know, we have plan approval, but we don't have implementation. And in order to have both of those, you have to have funding for that. You have to have money. So there's just this gross negligence on the delivery of those plans for really all the regions. And I know that Bob mentioned we only have $280,000, that's it, a year, and that has to get approved every year. So it's like a ridiculous amount, and that just tells everybody that that's how we value water. Is that how we value planning? So that's why we just did this big deep dive into this planning and implementation of our water plans. So right now, they do approve the plans. Perhaps they're modified in order to be approved and or disapproved. And then, of course, the implementation piece. So I don't have anything more to add to that. So I'm going to pass it on back to Norm.
So this is about living within our means. It's about limiting our means limiting our uses of water in the lower Rio Grande and in the middle Rio Grande. The first two problems we describe in making a case for change that are huge and overarching. It talks about limiting our uses of water to what we're entitled to, the legally available supply. And making a case for change has a little paragraph that illustrates the issue. New Mexico Constitution requires that water be administered by priority, first in time, first in right. While such priority administration is required, it has rarely, if ever, been put to use. That has allowed too many demands to be placed on a shrinking resource. Priorities must be administered so as not to exceed the physically and legally available water. Well, In 2003, after the Lower Rio Grande issues, well, they were in the process of blowing up, the legislature was presented, well, they passed a bill that basically is quite simple. It didn't get any new authority to the state engineer of the state. It merely said, the legislature recognizes that the adjudication process is slow, the need for water administration is urgent, compliance with interstate compacts is imperative, and the state engineer has the authority to administer water allocations in accordance with priorities, recorded with or declared or otherwise available to the state engineer. And it tells him what he needs to do, and it also tells him that he needs to come up with a way so that in times of shortage, water can move from seniors who have the most senior right to water to, for example, cities and juniors. And this is particularly true in the Lower Rio Grande, who are going to be out of priority in any priority administration scheme. Why haven't we administered by priority? Because the pain is just too great. But nonetheless, we're going to have to get there. So active water resources management is merely a way to begin to, well, to prepare for priority administration and to encourage planning that can result in a better solution than strict priority administration that would be acceptable. But it requires us first to recognize the limitation. In the Lower Rio Grande, preparations to limit our uses to our legally available supply. The state talks all the time about wanting to get into settlement. And the reason they want to get into settlement is because our fact, the facts we have to deal with are really bad for us. Really bad. We've got to figure out how to settle this. We're going to pay big damages. But a threshold for settlement is the ability to regulate our uses. When we got handed our hand on the Pecos River in the compact litigation with Texas, the litigation didn't prescribe how New Mexico was going to reduce its depletions of water so we could comply with the compact. It merely said, you're going to do it. And if we don't get started, we're not going to be able to do it. In the Middle Rio Grande, we are currently in compliance, but by a thin thread. I'm sure many of you know that New Mexico is responsible to pay for the evaporation from Elephant Butte Reservoir out of its compact share. We are on the thin margin of compliance these last few years. And if there's a bright side to, and there isn't really, to Elephant Butte being as low as Laura said, the bright side for us is there's not much evaporation that goes into our debits. And if that reservoir were a decent volume these days, we would be depleting more water than we're legally entitled to. I'm convinced of that. What are we going to do about it? Well, active water resources management says, and it said in 2003, that the state engineer would publish rules. The state engineer published some general rules, which were then in litigation for 8 years. They were upheld by the Supreme Court, New Mexico Supreme Court, in 2012, and nothing has been done since. The state engineer declares water master districts. One has been declared for the Lower Rio Grande. One needs to be declared for the Middle Rio Grande. All of it. The specific rules need to be published by the state engineer. A list of water rights needs to be put forward so that people can look at it and see where they are in that list of priorities. And then a date has to be set where rights that are junior to that date have to find a deal somewhere or they're not going to have water. That's the future that we're faced with. Now, that's the regulatory side, and it depends upon the state's legal authority, which is limited, can only administer by priority. There are no other tools available to the state. But the tools that we can agree to through planning that recognize our physical reality and our water budget, we can do whatever we decide to do and can reach agreement on. And money is going to have to be transferred. We're going to have to come to grips with the limits of our supply. And that can be done through the preparation of a plan of alternative administration. Now, it's really complicated, and it's going to be really difficult. And there's no doubt that it's going to be immediately tied up in litigation. Who knows how long it's going to take. But you know what the issue is today? The issue is we haven't even tried to get it started. We have to start.
Now, I guess it's Teresa's turn with state and regional local roles. You want a microphone too, huh?
These aren't as intense as Norm's comments. So let's see, Lee talked more about our thoughts around locale, sub-regional, basin, regional, and state roles. Planning entities at all levels should be quasi-permanent entities, funded sufficiently to meet, to plan, and to do their public outreach. So at the locale level, our state is very, very large, and our problems are really at a local, of local interest. The locales or sub-regions should be the ones identifying the problems and planning on how to address and prioritize recommendations or actions. Quasi-permanent sub-regional planning entities, maybe self-selected, should do that. And at the regional or at the basin level, the task should be to address basin-wide issues like compacts and unrecharged aquifers, and to make sure planning their contained subregions that they're not stepping on each other's toes. The MRG and the LRG are special cases that Norm addresses in AWORM. I would picture, but not direct, that regional planning entities be constituted with representatives from each of their contained subregions. And at the state level, general oversight of the planning process, overall policy issues, technical support, and deployment of funding. It's important in our approach that subregions as well as regions be explicitly recognized and funded to implement water planning. And that would include all of the public outreach necessary. And then I'll give some quick comments about funding, and I know that we probably have mentioned that a few times today, but we don't have funding, so part of the legislation is going to be to give capacity to the Interstate Stream Commission, you know, and to the planning process and the data and administration of AWORM and just a whole list of, laundry list of a whole bunch of things. And without the funding, then, you know, we can't act on these things, we can't get serious, and we can't value our water. So how much is how much? So that's always a big question. Is it a million? Is it 2 million? Is it 20 million? Is it 50 million? It's like that number is just a hard number to quantify. And in our legislation, we will hopefully get that asked for. So I don't have anything more to add to the funding. And we'd like to open it up for comments and discussion. And if somebody could give us the time so that we...
We've got 15 more minutes.
Yeah, about 15 minutes. So, so the thought here is that, yes, this has been written and it's been presented, but it's not ever final. These are ideas that have been worked on really hard by this team to put together into this booklet. But did they get it right? Did they miss something? I mean, there's always additional ideas, and I think Jeff brought up something about soil health that I'm not sure we have talked about in depth enough here. So I'd like to think about what else we might put in this proposal for action, as well as what are some of the issues that we might be stumbling up against. And I see all kinds of hands starting to show up, so I'm just going to start with this side and work across. Yes.
I heard the number a couple of times. I've seen the number a couple of times. $280,000. Was that the budget, the most recent budget for ISC?
For planning.
Okay. Yeah. So that works out to be approximately 13 cents per person here in New Mexico. So it's a staggeringly low number. I mean, we already know that 280K in this day and age is a mere pittance. So we have about 10 million or 20 million. So I guess that was just a statement. The other question that I had was, say more about water budgets. Do you have an idea? Is that going to be by certain regions within the state? Or are we just talking about a water budget for the state?
I believe a water budget for the state as a concept makes no sense at all.
That's right.
Because we depend on aquifers and we depend on rivers. And the rivers are subdivided into legal regions, the Middle Rio Grande, the Lower Rio Grande, where a lot of the supply, most of the supply we see in the Middle Rio Grande has to be delivered downstream. So what I'm talking about is water balances, water budgets for hydrologic units, aquifers, or segments of rivers.
Okay. Is that a new concept for New Mexico?
It shouldn't be. I mean, there was a water budget for the Middle Rio Grande that I had put together when I was ISC director back in 1999. It hasn't been changed or updated since. What is the water budget for the Lower Rio Grande? Well, different people will give you different answers, but it's a whole lot less than the water we're using right now. You know, what's the water budget for the Members Basin Aquifer, which is not recharging as fast as it's being used? There, I don't think we even know, because we don't have the data to get our arms around it.
Yes.
There is, it created in 1954, the state created an oil conservation tax. I may not have the correct type. Millions of dollars go in there, and it's all related on the percentage of income. Every, you know, based on our how many barrels produced. The legislature has never utilized that money for its stated goal, which is conservation and restoration. They have been using it for their pork barrel projects, for every legislator used to do little projects. Here a couple of years ago, they all figured out that most of those projects never completed, and the money was being wasted or never used, and finally, because of our deficits, they folded some of that money back in. I highly recommend that you find the correct title and we really go after that money, because the Permian Basin is going to provide a huge amount of money, and it already is, which will significantly increase the amount of money in water. In my opinion, you can convince the whole big coalition that water is a priority, but it can also tie in with game and fish, you know, the whole watersheds and everything. So that would be a target that I think you could build a big coalition on that says, here's our priorities because it involves the ecosystem, water use, you name it. That would be a source of money that you don't have. And it basically convinced the governor to say, all right, here's how much money I want out of this oil conservation tax to go for this and other programs.
Good idea. Dave.
I'd like to suggest that we take a broader view of planning and add a step at the beginning, which is to figure out what the problems are. And the problems have to be linked to the values that we have. So if we value the environment, the riparian environment, then the fact that the Rio Grande runs dry is going to be a problem. If we just are focused on meeting the demands that are out there, we're not going to have any new ideas, because we're locked in to servicing the values that are already represented in the problem, in the kind of mutually agreed upon problems, which are we don't have enough water. So I think it's not going to result in the changes that we want to see unless we deal with what the values are that we're expressing in our current water uses. So we've got to bring in the uses of water into our water understanding. So water isn't just water. It's the recreation, the agriculture. It's the environment for the next generation. And so I think that's much more interesting. Then you can have a values debate that is not so contentious. You said don't lead with values because we're so polarized. But I think there's some kinds of values that aren't polarizing, like next generation or protecting our resources, that kind of stuff. Motherhood and apple pie still holds water, so to speak.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. Okay, I'll stop there.
I just want to build on that. That's a really great point. And I'm tying it in my head to what Adrian said earlier, this idea about potentially, rather than having the Interstate Stream Commission, who does overall water management and planning for the state, underneath the one that gives out all the water rights to everybody, if it were the other way around, it would reflect a different set of values. And
ISC was in charge instead of the OSC?
Yeah, the OSC was just an administrative branch, really, of the ISC that looks at the overall big water picture and how to manage it for all of our needs and values. I'd love to hear Norm weigh in.
But the values have to be drilled down a little more. It can't just be agriculture. We value agriculture. Well, what kind of agriculture? Who's benefiting from it? What does it mean? We want water for Albuquerque. Well, what's Albuquerque doing with that water? And do we really need to have irrigation in the daytime at Burger King, so we can have green lawns? I mean, that's that sort of stuff. I think it has to get into kind of real, sort of meso values, something broader than just sectors, say, industry, agriculture, jobs. But okay. What kinds of jobs?
We've got hands. Janet.
So, my name's Janet Jarrett, and I've been involved in a lot of water stuff for a couple of decades or so. And I want to apologize to the group that put this document together for maybe not being as engaged as I should have for the last year and a half or so. A series of unfortunate events kind of limited my ability to participate. I don't have a lot of heartburn with the things that were verbalized. I have quite a lot of heartburn things that were written, because I think there's some missing pieces. Having spent 17 years and still on the executive committee of the Middlebury Grand Endangered Species Collaborative Program, I will 100% agree with Norm that there are tremendous data issues, particularly in agreeing on what the data set is that people should work with. And I'm not talking about just the lowest common denominator kind of data that people use in regional water plan. I'm talking about the state engineer no longer reports data in the same formats or the same kinds of data they used to. They look at diversions, not depletions. There are a lot of those issues. And I mean, I kind of have a reputation at the state engineer's office as caring more about depletions than they do. But I, just as a disclaimer, I live and die by agriculture and water delivery. It has been my sole source of income for my life and most of my life. It is now, and I have two kids, and I think we really have to think about, you're talking about agriculture, you're talking about habitat, you're talking about food, and when you're talking about the average age of farmers in New Mexico is something like 67, and your kids don't want to do it. My kids don't want to do it. I got two kids. One's a physicist, one's in medical school. They might, if I set it up correctly, they might come back as a hobby to kind of oversee the farm. As long as there's somebody else managing it, they have seen me and my parents, I've raised them on the same farm I grew up on, and they see the low pay, poverty level income for a crap ton of work that nobody really wants to do. But, the way of life doesn't really cut it for a lot of people anymore. There's not that, and the water delivery that happened this year and the failure of managing appropriately and priority that MRGCD engaged in that damaged pretty much all the irrigators. I got about 40 acres leased that's under the water bank. That water bank should have never been turned on this year. Never should have been turned on. that water should have been held back for people who have not sold their water rights and benefited from the sale of those water rights and then deplete the water that I got to use in the land that I own that has water rights. So there are a lot of issues with that. But I think that the data really is important. And in fact, the state here doesn't really look at depletions very well. That's a problem. And I think there's a real opportunity there. I agree with the soil health has got kind of a buzzword lately, but I really think that people don't understand what happens with soils and the way water is retained and used in a lowland watershed that we have in the Middle River Grand Valley that isn't really appreciated fully, and it isn't necessarily about, it is to some extent about what you grow, but you can't make esoteric decisions about that. People grow what will pay the bills. If you want to change what farmers grow, create a market. And that's it. And you have, it has to be a real market. Because they are trying to live, they're trying to decide, hey, put my kids through school, I can't afford health insurance, it's too expensive because I don't make enough money. So you have to think about it. If you want to make changes about what your environment looks like, it's economic, you have to create a market for it. I do struggle a little bit with, you know, I have a lot of issues with details in here. I don't think active water research and management is the way to go. I think all the data you have to do that and priority is exactly what you need to do education. And the litigation's going to roll no matter what. Why not have a final, litigation rather than active resource management rules that gets litigated and then you still have to do adjudication. It's still left hanging out there. And so I think you're already doing the data collection. You're already doing all you need to do. If you're really going to do priority administration to protect priority rights, then pick the final solution, not an interim solution, is my thought. But I think that the money spent, there are a lot of jurisdictional issues with regional water planning and trying to make it enforceable. And I think you get a lot of pushback from the Municipal League and county organizations and stuff because they don't want to have kind of a top-down approach done. I participated in Valencia County, you know, water, wastewater master plan just sitting on a shelf. So, I mean, I think there's a reason it's sitting on a shelf where your political will, where the economics of who's going to benefit, who's going to put the money in and push it, who's going to put the money in and fight it. You know, so you have to be realistic. But I think data is one of the places, data gathering and science is one of the places where we can kind of try to peel some of the politics out, really look at facts that are verifiable and substantiated, facts that are kind of incontrovertible. That's where we can go to take the politics out of it. And I would rather see the money not spent in more fruitless water planning, because it's honestly, it's been a frustration, kind of a waste of money to this point. But to really put it into the data, then what the, how the data is used, it can be informing regional water planning, it can be informing local water planning, it can be informing adjudications, it can be informing a lot of stuff. But I really think there are some gaps and some first steps before you try to do enforced implementation when people are going to fight that the implementation doesn't account for accurate data.
Okay, at this point I have about 10 hands and 2 minutes. So should we go a little bit longer or should we take the 2 minutes and go out and have our sandwiches?
We need to hear this.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, my opinion.
Okay, good. Elizabeth.
I just want to mention one thing because it kind of got scattered. The person who's supposed to represent the provost, that's the adjudication is the baseline part of the administration. I wish someone had said even one sentence about that. That's the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. I think I could be wrong if you check with my review chestnut about this. The provost would like to do short sharing, and they're willing to do that. They're willing to consider that, but again, I agree with a lot of what Janet just said, that you have to really get the data so that it's accurate for these sub-regions and these sub-interests that are really critical. I think that agriculture is basically being gamed out by interests that would prefer never to hear about agriculture. I worry about Netflix coming in to Las Vegas. It's already driving me bananas. They're going to totally change the way water is understood. It's a California perspective, and look, California is burning up. But again, to go back to the adjudication issue, it's going to happen at some point. I don't know how. It may or may not. I think those would prefer not to have that adjudication. But on the other hand, it's getting like Chaco Canyon. You got to do something about it, because if you don't, you're going to have a disaster. And so, anyway, that's what I want to say.
Thank you. Jeff, you had your hand up. I'm sorry. Oh, Bill.
And Norm, you may know the backstory to the wells that experienced lowering of water level and went dry and climbed again. The backstory to that is in 1972, my company went down and had a talk with Bill Otto. You may have known him, Bill. He was a water engineer.
He was my boss.
I noticed you didn't give out names. My firm had just finished building a computer model for the Tucson Basin groundwater system for the city of Tucson. And I came up and talked to Bill and thought the city might be interested in learning some of the experiences that we had in running what-if models. And Bill said, oh, all we need is more wells and more storage tanks and more pipelines. We don't need studies. That was in 1972. So I've seen this problem developing over the last 50 years. And I've grown more and more frustrated with it. And since I got into selling water rights, I began doing some background on the history of these planning efforts. They started around 1898 when the governor appointed the Water Resources Committee. And they began, if you read their minutes, with the belief that they could easily pass some legislation. And as they looked at it, they realized, and you mentioned, that different corners of the state regarded water different. You can't arrive at a single planning document for the entire state. So where do you start? Do you start with Albuquerque? Do you start with the Lower Rio Grande, which is a very complicated situation? We don't even have an adjudication of the water rights in the Rio Grande. The state engineer handles it one at a time. And then in the long run, as a result of planning, it started more than 100 years ago. Who is planning for whom? I think that's Dave's point. And I've always believed, and have come to believe, that people have a direct connection to where this water is going, by whom they sell it. And it's a free market that's going to dictate where that water goes and where those who plan on using water are going to have to apply some kind of a financial yardstick as to whether their plan wins. They buy it, they vote with their dollars. Because I see most of our clients are coming out of the valley and their generations where farming is not in the future. As Janice mentioned, the kids don't want to water farm. We put water in trust specifically so that children who are on the drug scene can't force their parents to sell the land to get them the money to buy drugs.
How many more access to grinder in this audience?
Probably about as many people who are here. Probably.
That's not what I think.
Okay. So, anybody else have a comment about specifically the proposal?
Yeah,
the guy, right behind you, Jeff.
No. I'll be really fast. I mean, it really resonated what Norm was talking about, the early days of Albuquerque and the water use and the lack of planning, is that Albuquerque and actually all the cities in New Mexico and the Southwest were built as, you know, large water-using machines. And the utilities look at it as long as the per capita use declines, that's a good thing, and the, you know, xeriscapes and rebates and all those things. But we really need to restructure the cities and the urban rainwater harvesting and other ways to be much more water efficient and use less water. And we're only just beginning to do that. Albuquerque is pretty nascent, Santa Fe's done a little bit more. So there's a lot more that could be done, and, you know, we're going to have to do that. And I think that should be, in, you know, very specific things to do.
Great. Okay, Jeff.
Couple things. I appreciate what you're saying in terms of the values piece. The thing is,
could you speak up a little bit, Jeff?
Yeah, okay, thank you. I appreciate the ideas about the value piece in terms of the idea that instead of creating a competitive situation, you know, water versus economic development versus agriculture versus, if why not create the state an and concept? Let's have agriculture and economic development and water and wildlife, that whole value set. So if there's clarity and agreement up front, it helps to take the competition, the fighting that goes on between. And, you know, I'm just mindful that most of this is sociological issues, not scientific. And we're, so the planning, and they say sociologically, people make decisions by emotions, not by facts. So if we're focusing on facts, we're going to probably miss the whole thing. We're going to be here 10 years from now talking about the same thing. So how do we change fundamentally the deep parts of this? So that's something that's really important in this.
I'd like to just make a quick comment there. As long as we are driven by our values and we're unmoored to the hydrologic reality, it needs to be all the ands you talked about. It has to be all the ands. But we have a zero-sum game here, and we don't understand what that is. So how can we deal with values when our values say, I want all the water for this purpose, or most of it, or whatever?
That's not the ands. That's the board. I'm talking about how do we take care of the water base that we have and do these other things that we desire. And it's got to be, like you say, the reality of this water base we have, and here's the reality of, and here's the other things. Otherwise, it'll be competitive, and it's just, 10 years from now, I guarantee it'll be the same place. It's got to be different.
You're going to be my last person.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll try to be quick. Planning is an interesting thing. There are a lot of people here mentioned today the comments about plans are written and then start collecting dust and that's it. So one of the things I'm very interested in planning is making sure that when I do planning, that it doesn't collect dust. So here are a couple of thoughts that I just wanted to pass by you and then I have couple of other things that I think are important to the plan itself. One, there should be a communication section of your plan. How you communicate what you're going to be doing, making sure that the state of New Mexico, not just Albuquerque, not just Las Cruces or Santa Fe, but the entire state understands what's going on here. Because this is a state issue. Even though state planning may not be appropriate, it is still a state issue. Adaptation. Mandate adaptation. We talked about the fact that we have good data, but it could be better. Make sure that adaptation with new data and new realities is mandated into the plan. Now, knowing how, a side comment here, knowing how mandates and revisions and plans work, the revision deadlines will always be lost. But if you have mandates, revisions mandated in there, they will get done, and they will incorporate new data. It's important. And data is important. I agree very much with you. But we already have a decent model for many parts of the state, and the basic tenet of what's happening to water in the state is well known, and we've all heard it. We need to do implementation. And there needs to be a very definite plan and steps for implementation going forward. Implementation needs to take precedence over the planning portion, but not completely overshadow it. And then finally, funding. We've identified that funding needs to happen. What we haven't identified is how that's going to be happening. I'm like a lot of people when I say, yeah, we need more funding, let's go do that. You suddenly run into a brick wall. How are we going to do that? we have lots of limitations in the state. I suggest that rather than saying we need to get out of quick funding and certainly not mention a amount of money that we need to have, just say find particular avenues for that funding. Look outside the state, think of new creative ways, look at the current legislation and how it actually worded to use what we already have available to us, and spend some time thinking about driving thoughts towards how you get additional funding, rather than saying we need it. And then finally, there was a comment just about zero sum within, they were talking about a zero sum game. I think that may be correct, but I think the zero sum that we're talking about is not necessarily the zero sum that we're given with simply depletions and inputs. There's also water conservation. And someone mentioned about water conservation going on in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, but it's not happening everywhere in the state. I travel around the state a lot. It is not happening. It's not happening in agriculture. It's not happening in industry. It's not happening in the municipalities nearly the way that it should be. And this wonderful conversation about soil health, there are ways to increase the amount of water that we have available to us that we are not taking advantage of. And that needs to be put out there in a much larger way. I think perhaps taken out as a separate entity in your plan and put forward. Because the amount of water, I believe, that we can get through conservation can equal the inputs that we are putting in now. I could be wrong, Norm, you know more than I do, I'm sure. But we need to talk about water conservation as a state rather than as individual entities.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. I'm actually going to be the microphone dictator here and say that we are finished with the panel. Thank you very much. And now I am going to switch and become the vice president of the Water Advocates, in case you didn't know that. And this is our most exciting part of the whole day. And that is that we're going to go to lunch. And lunch is outside. There are sandwiches. If you go out here, you'll pick up a plate. And there are five different types of sandwiches, and there's sodas, etc. But before we begin, I want to also say the piece that we need to do during lunch is to elect our new board of directors. You've heard about how the assembly has now moved to be the advocates. And that was not just an easy, let's just change the name. We went through a two-day process of looking at our strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and threats, and came up with this. But we haven't now done all the changes. What does that mean? Like, what do we need to do to change bylaws and images and activism and outreach, etc.? So that's going to be the next board. It's really important. We have six different types of advocacy groups that we currently utilize, and they will be set up with tents on each table. So after you grab your sandwich, go to one of these. We have the technical specialty interests, the cultural and historic water use interests, and each one of these actually has a statement that goes along with this title, so each table will have that statement. The environmental preservation and improvement interests, industrial, institutional, and business interests, residential water use interests, agricultural, business, and production interests. Now, they don't have to stay this way. The new board can decide that these are not the groups that should be part of the Water Advocates and they need to be changed, but this board, I thought, had done enough with changing our entire focus. So becoming the advocates and now moving forward, that will be the new board, and I hope that you will all sign up. You need to have two directors and one alternate, and then those sheets, which will also be on your tables, will be turned into Carolyn at the end of lunch, and I'm going to sort of shorten lunch a little bit. Have your conversations, but we need to get back on track, so we're going to start back up again in 45 minutes. Okay. Thank you.